Morning scripture reading is Job chapter 1, verses 8 through 22. Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you noticed my servant Job? No one else on earth is like him. He is an honest and innocent man, honoring God and staying away from evil." But Satan answered the Lord, "Job honors God for a good reason. You have put a wall around him, his family, and everything he knows. You have blessed the things he has done. His flocks and herds are so large that they almost cover the land. But reach out your hand and destroy everything he has, and he will curse you to your face." The Lord said to Satan, "All right then. Everything Job has is in your power, but you must not touch Job himself." Then Satan left the Lord's presence. One day, Job's sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine together at the oldest brother's house. A messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys were eating grass nearby when the Sabaeans attacked and carried them away. They killed the servants with swords, and I am the only one who escaped to tell you." The messenger was still speaking when another messenger arrived and said, "Lightning from God fell from the sky. It burned up the sheep and the servants, and I am the only one who escaped to tell you." The second messenger was still speaking when another messenger arrived and said, "The Babylonians sent three groups of attackers that swept down and stole your camels and killed the servants. I am the only one who escaped to tell you." The third messenger was still speaking when another messenger arrived and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine together at the oldest brother's house. Suddenly, a great wind came from the desert, hitting all four corners of the house at once. The house fell in on the young people, and they are all dead. I am the only one who escaped to tell you." When Job heard this, he got up and tore his robe and shaved his head to show how sad he was. Then he bowed down to the ground to worship God. He said, "I was naked when I was born, and I will be naked when I die. The Lord gave these things to me, and he has taken them away. Praise the name of the Lord." In all of this, Job did not sin or blame God.
When I was a child, I used to get my hair cut at a barber shop in downtown Martins Ferry, my hometown. My dad and my mother would take me there. And in this barber shop, there were some interesting displays in a cabinet. And the one that I was intrigued with the most, and the only one I can remember, was a display of three figurines. And two were boxers, men who were, in the sport of boxing, there were boxers and a referee. And what was interesting about this display was that one of the boxers was like this, giving a punch to the other boxer. But that really wasn't what was happening, because the referee's head was up like this, and the other boxer was like this. And so, in other words, you know, the one boxer was giving an uppercut to the referee when he was supposed to be giving it to the other boxer, and the other boxer was just looking on. So the referee is the one taking the hit, even though it really wasn't his fault. And it reminds me a little bit of the book of Job. In the book of Job, it's as if God, it's as if Job is an innocent bystander in a fight between God and Satan. And Job is the one who gets punched. You know, Satan, in the book of Job, Satan's not really out to get Job. He's out to get God. Satan is saying, "The only reason Job worships you, Lord, and lives a righteous life is because you're paying him to do it. You prospered him. You protected him. You're not a God worthy of worship. You pay people to honor you." And poor Job here
is the one who gets caught in the middle. It's almost like his righteousness was a curse. And the book of Job, to me, is one of the more important books in the entire Bible. This book teaches us about dealing with pain and suffering and helps us understand how to respond in those circumstances. So what I want to focus on for a few minutes is what God teaches us in responding to pain and suffering. What is our response supposed to be? In the first chapter, we learn that Job was a man of the highest character. He was a righteous man, deeply respected God. And we learn that God had prospered him. He had thousands of sheep and camels and oxen and donkeys. He had a wonderful family. He had a wife and 10 children. And later in Job, we learned that he was highly respected in the community and highly involved in helping the poor in the community. So Job, truly was living a righteous life. The prophet Ezekiel even highlighted him in company with Noah and Daniel as three of the most righteous men who ever lived. And that's pretty high praise. And that's part of what makes this book so perplexing. Built into human nature is a sense of fairness or justice. We believe in justice from a very early age. And as we age, since we believe in justice, then we apply that to God. We apply our idea of justice to God. And we believe that the good should be rewarded and that evil should be punished. But that isn't always the way it is in life. Which raises questions in our minds about God's justice. What God permitted Satan to do to Job just to prove a point to Satan severely challenges our sense of justice. And as the story unfolds, the sum of all of Job's possessions were allowed to be taken away in one day by Satan. God allowed it. Satan did it. And it's almost similar to what we've seen, this past summer in California, the wildfires that destroyed people's property, the flooding that has occurred with this recent hurricane in Florida and Georgia and Virginia. People's belongings were taken away, in one day. But this is worse in Job. The people of California and Florida, they probably had insurance. So they're going to be able to rebuild. They're going to be able to have a home again. They probably had money in the bank. Well, Job didn't. But that wasn't the worst of it for Job. In addition to losing all of his possessions, all 10 of Job's children died on the same day. But even that wasn't the extent of it. On another day, he was struck with an extremely painful disease. And the symptoms of his physical pain were horrible. They included terrible itching, insomnia, running sores and scabs, horrible smelling breath, weight loss, diarrhea, and blackened skin. He was so disfigured that his friends didn't recognize him when they came to visit him. So Job, in a short period of time, experienced a degree of emotional and physical pain that hopefully none of us will ever experience. Sometimes your physical problems are due to your own poor decisions and carelessness, but not in this case. God, this is probably the hardest part for us, God permitted Satan to strike Job. And his suffering was so horrendous that even his wife encouraged him to die. Because she couldn't even suffer. She couldn't bear to watch him suffer. And it caused Job even to wish he'd never been born. There are a couple of truths that we need to understand about Satan. And one of the truths that you learn about Satan in the book of Job is that he has access to the very presence of God in heaven. And it reveals that, he came into the presence of God. That's how all this began. And the book of Revelation teaches also, though, that Satan is sort of on a leash. but he still has the freedom to roam around like a roaring lion, as one biblical writer indicated, and cause great pain and suffering in people's lives. And we also learned that Satan can only touch you with God's permission. And God will allow it for your good and his glory, even though it may not always seem good to you. But you see, that's because God's goal is to make you more like his son, Jesus. And sometimes that involves some really hard lessons and a lot of suffering. You know, there were two things, however, Job would not give up: his faith and his integrity, even though that's what his wife wanted him to do. When life is unbearable, it's easy for us to give up. But giving up is not what builds character. According to commentator Warren Wiersbe, a professor of history, once said, "If Christopher Columbus had turned back, nobody would have blamed him. But nobody would have remembered him either." If you want to be memorable, sometimes you have to be miserable. So Job questioned God. He wanted to know why this was happening to him, as any of us would. And it's okay to question why. It's okay to question God as long as you don't feel as though God owes you an answer. Even Jesus questioned God. Remember on the cross, "Why have you forsaken me?" he said. But even if God were to give you an answer, would that take your pain away? You know, do you think that when Sue Lisman saw the x-ray of her broken leg, that made her feel better? Probably made her feel worse. So even if you do receive an answer, do you think you'd even understand it if God were to give you that answer? Job obviously did not understand why he was suffering, and God chose not to explain it. God does not owe us an explanation. He does what he thinks is best, and whatever he does, as previously mentioned, is for our good and his glory. He also knows we wouldn't understand it, even if he did explain it to us. Satan's goal is to prove that the only reason that you worship God, that you love God, that you serve God, is because of what God does for you and gives to you. That is his goal. Now, you would think at a time like this in life, in Job's life, it would be a real blessing to have friends. But Job's friends were not very helpful. All three said some good and true things about God, but they also said some very foolish things. They were really of no help at all to Job. And it was because their God was too small. They thought they had God all figured out. You know, the three friends actually expressed anger toward Job, the poor guy. I mean, you know, to add to Job's problems. And Job kind of hints at what caused his friends' anger in chapter 6, verse 21. He said, "You also have been no help. You see something terrible, and you are afraid." Job's friends were angry because they were afraid that the same thing would happen to them. And so they felt it was very necessary to defend their premise that God rewards the righteous and punishes the wicked, so that as long as they lived a righteous life, what happened to Job was not going to happen to them. And what shot a big hole in their theology was Job's refusal to give up his integrity and his refusal to admit that he had sinned, which created a fear that led to anger in the lives of his friends. And so there's a lesson here for us. We often think that the best thing we can do for someone who is suffering is to try to provide some kind of an explanation for their suffering, and then some kind of a formula for how to fix the problem. The truth is, there isn't typically a good explanation or a good formula. So the best thing that we can do as a friend is just simply to be there and to pray. Accept what they're feeling. Sympathize with them. The truth is, there are no easy answers. Our God and this life are way too complex for our finite little minds to figure out. And it brings to mind what God said through Isaiah in chapter 55, verse 8 and 9. And I think of this often when things don't go the way I want them to, and I'm trying to figure out why. God told through Isaiah, said, "My thoughts are not like your thoughts. Your ways are not my ways. Just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." Translation, you're not going to understand everything that happens. C.S. Lewis wrote a book after the death of his wife. It's called A Grief Observed. It was about his painful experience during the suffering and death of his wife. And this is a quote from the book. He says, "Talk to me about the truth of religion, I'll listen gladly. Talk to me about the duty of religion, and I'll listen submissively. But don't come talking to me about the consolation of religion, or I shall suspect you don't understand." Job had lost everything. He was totally bankrupt. He lost all of his possessions, all of his children, and his health. All he could give to God, the only thing he had left to give to God, was his faith. And actually, that is what God wanted in order to prove his point to Satan. Job questioned why he was born because of all his losses and suffering, but God knew why. God knew what he was doing. Job questioned the justice of God. He said in chapter 13, verse 3, "But I want to speak to the Almighty. I want to argue my case with God." Job wanted to tell God, "I haven't done anything to deserve this." And so he appealed in verse 23. "How many evil things and sins have I done? Show me my wrong and my sin." In other words, why are you punishing me like this when I haven't done anything wrong? And again, that's our view of God and justice. If you do good, you deserve a reward. If you do evil, well, you certainly deserve punishment. Unfortunately, that isn't always the way it goes, even though Job's friends believed that was how it was supposed to go. Eliphaz, one of Job's friends, said in chapter 15, verse 20, "The wicked man writhes in pain all his days through all the years that are laid up for the ruthless." Job, however, disagreed. In chapter 21, Job talks about how in his view, the wicked prosper. They live long lives, enjoy peace, and have no desire to serve God. That's what he had observed. The psalmist even backs up Job's claim. Psalm 73, verses 2 through 5, the psalmist wrote, "But I had almost stopped believing. I had almost lost my faith because I was jealous of proud people. I saw wicked people doing well. They're not suffering. They're healthy and strong. They don't have troubles like the rest of us. They don't have problems like other people." That's often the way it is in life when we observe from a distance. But the psalmist also wrote this: "I tried to understand all this, but it was too hard for me to see until I went to the temple of God. And then I understood what will happen to them. You have put them in danger. You caused them to be destroyed." You know, wicked people often do die before their time because of their lifestyle. You know, if they are engaged in sexual promiscuity, narcotics, alcohol, and just a purely reckless life, it can lead to a premature death. I do say the word opioids, right? But there are some godless people who do live a long life, and maybe it's the grace of God just giving them an opportunity to repent, to turn their life around. Don't know. Elihu is the only friend really to bring some common sense to the dialogue. He makes a couple of valid points. In chapter 33, Elihu speaks about how God can use suffering not necessarily to punish, although he does at times, but to keep people from sinning and to make them a better person. In verse 19, he wrote, people may be corrected while in bed in great pain. C.S. Lewis, again in the same book, The Problem of Pain, says, God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our conscience, but shouts in our pains. It's his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. In the final chapters of Job, when God chose to address Job's questions, God makes it clear that he's not worthy to argue his case before God. Job's incapable of understanding because God's wisdom and power are far beyond anything you can think or imagine. And Job realized this. He came to that realization and said to God in chapter 42, all I can do is humble myself and repent. If we accuse God of injustice, we are essentially saying to God, I'm in the right and you're in the wrong. It's absolutely absurd. You know, God, even after this ordeal, God referred to Job four times as his servant, including at the end of his ordeal. And in chapter 42, verse 7, it says, we have to ask the question, how did Job serve God? By suffering and refusing to turn against God. By being faithful and by patiently enduring, which proved Satan wrong. And that's the lesson for us. No matter what happens in life, or how much suffering you have to endure, never, ever, ever turn against God. Continue to honor Him and be patient with Him. God always has your best interest at heart. The cross tells us that. It's the way to prove Satan wrong. Question is, will God be able to prove Satan is wrong about you in your life? Do you just love him because of what he gives to you? Or do you love him because of who he is? Paul encouraged the Romans in Romans 12, verse 12. He said, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. That's what God is seeking from us. And if you've read the book of Job, you know that God blessed Job even more the second time than he did the first time. But we have to be careful not to assume that's going to happen to us. You know, we can't assume from the book of Job that every trial is going to turn out for the best, or all problems will be solved, and everyone will live happily ever after. The greatest blessing Job received was not his health, was not his wealth. His greatest blessing was knowing God better and learning to be patient in trials and to continue to be faithful to Him. Because we know the happily ever after is not going to occur in this life. It's going to occur in the next life if we patiently endure and hold on to our faith. G. Campbell Morgan wrote in his book, The Answers of Jesus to Job, in the whole story of Job, we see the patience of God and endurance of man. And when these act in fellowship, the issue is certain. It is that of coming forth from the fire as gold, that of receiving the crown of life. So whatever you might be going through, you can trust God. Be patient when you are. That's the message of Job. Be patient. Persevere. Never give up. No matter what God allows Satan to do in your life, there is a happily ever after life to come if you'll be patient and faithful through it all. You can take a look at your blue communication card if you have one and have not yet done that. I've given you, again, three next steps to take. Memorize Romans 12, 12. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. And then I encourage you to read Elihu's discourse in Job 33 because he's the only one that makes much sense. And again, to accept the patience challenge. I know Max gave you that challenge a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't see very many people had checked that box, so I'm giving you another chance this morning. Be patient when you are one. Accept the patience challenge, because someday your trials will be a distant memory. And maybe there are those of you who are going through a really rough time right now. See no end in sight. I just suggest that you humble yourself this morning. Ask God for the strength and the patience to endure whatever it is you're going through. And if we can help you by praying with you, counseling you, whatever way we can help, we want to be helpful. So we encourage you this morning. Respond as we stand and as we sing.